Delivered by Venerable Sayadaw Sillananda at the Tathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California, April 24, 1998.
Okay, last month I talked about Vipassana meditation. So a person who practices Vipassana meditation, if he is successful with the practice, then he reaches or he gains enlightenment. And so the subject for today's talk is enlightenment. Nowadays, people talk about enlightenment, and enlightenment is a popular subject, but I'm not sure whether they really understand what they are talking about, because enlightenment can mean a different thing to different persons or to people who belong to different religions. So enlightenment for a Christian may not be the same as enlightenment for a Buddhist or for a Hindu. So before we talk about enlightenment, it is good to understand what enlightenment is according to Theravada Buddhism. So first we must know what enlightenment is. Now, enlightenment according to Buddhism is the realization of the Four Noble Truths and eradication of mental defilements. So at least there must be these two things with enlightenment. A person who gains enlightenment sees or penetrates the Four Noble Truths. That means he understands the Four Noble Truths through self-experience, and at the same time he is able to get rid of mental defilements. At the moment of enlightenment, there arises in a yogi a type of consciousness, and that type of consciousness is called magga or path consciousness. And that consciousness, or that type of consciousness, is new to that yogi. He has never experienced that type of consciousness before. So such a type of consciousness arises, and that consciousness takes Nibbana as object, and at the same time it is able to eradicate mental defilements. Now when a person practices Vipassana meditation, so at the successful end of Vipassana meditation, he gains enlightenment. So following the moments of Vipassana meditation, that consciousness arises and it takes Nibbana as object, and it eradicates mental defilements. So from that time on, a person is said to have gained enlightenment, or a person is called an enlightened person. So the moment of enlightenment is described in a book called Milinda Panha, or Questions of King Milinda. So there, the moment of enlightenment is described clearly by the Venerable Nagasena. So there he said, the mind of the yogi who is incessantly, that is, step by step, observing the objects, or observing mind and matter, transcends the stream of mind and matter that is going on incessantly and plunges into the cessation of the stream of mind and matter that is incessantly going on. So here, who is incessantly step by step observing the objects means who is practicing vipassana meditation. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you take the mind or the matter as object, and you have to be constantly observing. That means you have to be observing whether mind or matter at the present moment. So during the moments of vipassana, the mind of a yogi is on the mind and matter, or they are called five aggregates of clinging, or miscellaneous formations. So that is the moment of vipassana meditation. And when vipassana meditation becomes mature, and say a yogi gains enlightenment, then his mind plunges into the cessation of the stream of mind and matter that is incessantly going on. So that means at that moment, at the moment of enlightenment, his mind takes the cessation of the stream of mind and matter, or just cessation of mind and matter, or in other words, nirvana as object. So his mind, as it were, falls into onto that object, and that that moment is what we call the moment of enlightenment. At the moment of enlightenment, the stream of vipassana has ceased, and the consciousness that arises at the moment of enlightenment is the path consciousness. So at the moment of path consciousness, there is no vipassana consciousness, and since there is no vipassana consciousness, there are no objects of vipassana at that time for that yogi. So for the yogi, both vipassana and its object have disappeared, and instead, there is the path consciousness, and that path consciousness takes nibbana as object. So a yogi who has practiced in a correct way, and so by wisdom reaches into the cessation of mind and matter, is called one who has, who realizes nibbana. So here it is said that a yogi who has practiced in a correct way, so you have to practice vipassana meditation in a correct way, and as a result of that correct way, the mind of the the mind of the yogi reaches into the cessation of mind and matter by way of wisdom. So that means he does not reach the cessation of mind and matter physically, but through his understanding, or in his mind, he reaches the cessation of mind and matter. He realizes the cessation of mind and matter, or he takes the cessation of mind and matter as object at that moment. And the cessation of mind and matter is another name for nibbana. Now, enlightenment follows vipassana. So, enlightenment is actually the result or outcome of vipassana practice. But enlightenment or magga, I mean path consciousness, is not called a vipaka of vipassana. It is called by other names. So in one commentary, it is described as the outcome of vipassana, the profit of vipassana, and the accomplishment of vipassana. So actually it is the result of vipassana. The enlightenment is the result of vipassana. Without vipassana, there can be no enlightenment. And if you know Abhidhamma, yeah, you will clearly understand that there can be no enlightenment or path consciousness without vipassana. So in the seventh book of Abhidhamma, it is said that the path consciousness arises immediately after a consciousness called change of lineage, and the change of lineage consciousness immediately follows the two or three moments of vipassana consciousness. So if there is no vipassana consciousness, or if there is no stream of vipassana, there can be no path consciousness, or there can be no enlightenment. Now, when we read the discourses and when we read the stories, especially in the commentaries, we repeatedly come across descriptions of those who gained enlightenment immediately after the discourse or at the end of discourse. Now, you remember the first sermon. So at the end of the first sermon, Kondanya became a Sotapanna. That means he became enlightened. So he didn't seem to have practiced anything at all. He listened to the Dhamma, the first sermon, and then he is said to have gained enlightenment. So there are many other discourses and also stories, especially in Dhammapada, where it is mentioned that such and such people became Sotapanna or Arahants at the end of the discourse. So there seemed to be instant enlightenment, and I wish there was one. So when we read the discourses and others, we may think that those people who gained enlightenment did not have to practice vipassana at all. But that is not true, because every enlightenment must be preceded by vipassana, as I have to explain. So those people also went through the stages of vipassana one by one, maybe while listening to the Dhamma, or maybe a little after the Dhamma discourse. But they went through these stages so fast that they seem to have attained enlightenment instantly without the practice of vipassana meditation. But without vipassana meditation, there can be no enlightenment. And those people who were described as gaining enlightenment at the end of the discourse were people who have accumulated their paramis, perfections, in their previous lives. And so they were people who are mature enough to gain enlightenment when the Buddha taught them. And so they were like the lotus flowers that were waiting for the sun to come up so that they can open up or they can bloom. So such people who have the accumulated experience through the previous lives were able to gain enlightenment almost instantly. From the moment of path consciousness onwards, a person is called a noble person, or in Pali, an Ariya. Since he has become a noble person, his moral conduct is very pure. So a person who has reached enlightenment, even the lowest stage of enlightenment, has very pure moral conduct, and it is said in our books that he will keep the five precepts intact. That means he will never break any one of the five precepts. You know the five precepts: killing living beings, stealing, sexual misconduct, telling lies, and taking intoxicants. So the commentary said that even in the next life, a noble disciple never kills a living being, never steals, never commits sexual misconduct, never tells a lie, and never takes intoxicants. So suppose a person becomes enlightened as a human being, and then he dies and he is reborn as again as another human being. So when he is young, he is an infant, he may not know that he is a noble person. But after some time, when he grows up, then he knows about his condition, and even when he does not know his condition, he will not kill a living being, and so on. The commentaries give an example of picking up a fish. So if you give to that young child a live fish and a dead fish, say for him to eat, then he will pick up the dead fish and not the live fish. So I don't know how to describe it. It is built in him not to kill or not to break any of the five precepts. Nowadays, there are people who claim to be enlightened. Once I saw on television a man claiming that he was one of the 12 enlightened persons in the world. And when somebody claims to be enlightened, we do not know whether he is truly enlightened or not. But we can, say, judge from his moral conduct. If he keeps the five precepts intact, if he doesn't kill a being, a living being, and so on, then it is likely that he may be enlightened. But if he breaks any one of these rules, we can definitely say that he is not. So this is one thing we can judge a person who claimed himself or herself to be enlightened by watching him or her about their moral conduct. And also there are persons who think they are enlightened. They may have practiced meditation and they may have experienced something they did not experience before, and then they may think honestly that they are enlightened. So such persons can also judge themselves by asking themselves, do I break any of the precepts? What do I do when there are ants or insects in the house, or mice and others? So if you suppose you think you are a enlightened person, so if you can still kill a living being, kill an ant or an insect, and then you are not an enlightened person. So an enlightened person keeps his or her moral conduct pure, and he or she will never break any one of the five precepts. Now, is enlightenment for monks only, or do monks only gain enlightenment? I think this is a silly question. But this question is for those who do not know anything about Buddhism. So the answer to this question is no, because there were many lay people during the time of the Buddha who gained enlightenment and who became noble persons. There was a young man called Yasa that was after the Buddha gave his first sermon. Buddha, he came to the Buddha and he met the Buddha, and Buddha taught to him and he became enlightened. And also his father became enlightened. And there were people like King Bimbisara. He was a king and he became enlightened. So he continued to be a king and rule over a kingdom, but he was a sotapanna. And also there was the banker Anathapindika, who had the Jetavana monastery built and offered to the Sangha. And also there is a lay devotee, a male lay devotee called Visakha. So he also became enlightened as a lay person. And there are other people like Chitta and Nakula Pita, Nakula's father, Mahanama, a Sakyan king, and also the physician Jivaka. So they are all lay people, and they were all enlightened persons. So they continue to be lay people after their enlightenment, and they died as lay people. So enlightenment is not for monks only, but for anybody who cares to practice vipassana meditation. Now another question is, is enlightenment for men only? So this is another silly question. Can only men gain enlightenment? Now, you may have heard of Buddha's foster mother, whose name was Gautami. So he wanted to become a nun, and Buddha did not allow her to be a nun. So when she could not get permission from the Buddha, asking him for two or three times, she put on the robes of a nun with 500 Sakyan princesses, and then went to the Buddha to ask permission. But they dare not approach the Buddha, and so they were outside the monastery, and they were wearied from the journey and so on. Then the Venerable Ananda met them outside the monastery and asked why they had come, and then when Gautami told him about why they were there, he went to the Buddha and on their behalf asked permission from the Buddha. He said, please allow them to become nuns. And Buddha refused for three times. And then he asked, Bande, a woman having gone forth, that means after becoming a nun, can she gain enlightenment? Can she become a Sotapanna, a stream winner, or a once returner, or a non-returner, or can she become an arahant? So that means if a woman enters the order of the Buddha, so after joining the order of the Buddha, can become enlightened, then Buddha said, yes, women are capable of gaining enlightenment after they joined the holy order. So this answer given by the Buddha shows that enlightenment is for everybody, not for men only. So women are also capable, just as not all men are capable of gaining enlightenment, all women are not capable of gaining enlightenment, but there are many, many women who are capable of gaining enlightenment. And even during the time of the Buddha, there were many women who became enlightened. So according to this answer given by the Buddha to Ananda, we know that women are as capable as men are to gain enlightenment. So being a woman is not a disadvantage. So as far as gaining enlightenment is concerned. So during the time of the Buddha, there were many prominent ladies who gained enlightenment. And some ladies remained as lay persons until the end of their lives, and many others became and joined the order and became nuns. So among them, the most well known was the late devotee Visakha. Now Visakha became a Sotapanna at the age of seven, and then she remained as a Sotapanna until her death. I think she lived to be 120 years. And Gautami, the Buddha's foster mother, became enlightened. And Yasodhara, I will not say Buddha's wife, Prince Siddhartha's wife. So Buddha's former wife, she became enlightened. And then Rupananda, Buddha's cousin, and Oplawana, Khema, Bhattacharya, there are many, many prominent ladies, say, who became enlightened, who became arahants, and many of them joined the order. So you can read about them in the book called Therigatha in Pali, and that book is translated into English maybe 2 times. I don't know the name of the translation made recently. The old translation is called Psalms of the Sisters, something like that. Now, does an enlightened person know he is enlightened? Now, enlightenment is a self-experience. That means to be experienced by oneself. So, a person who has attained enlightenment really knows that he has attained it. And also, immediately after the enlightenment thought process, there follow some thought processes by which an enlightened person reviews the path, the fruition, nibbana, and the defilements that are eradicated and the defilements that are remaining. So it is said that every person who has gained enlightenment reviews at least the first 3, the path, the fruition, and nibbana. Regarding the defilements that are eradicated and those that are still to be eradicated, they may or may not review. So every enlightened person reviews the 3, the path, fruition, and consciousness. And so a person who has gained enlightenment really knows that he has attained it. But if that person has no knowledge of the Dhamma, no knowledge of the Buddha's teachings, then he may not know that what he had attained is called enlightenment. You come to this place, and so you have the personal experience of this place, but you may not know that this place is called a Tathagata Meditation Center. So a person who has attained enlightenment may not know that it is an enlightenment, or it is called enlightenment, but he has experienced it himself. He has reached this stage himself, and so he knows that it is something he has attained. Now, Buddha was the first person who became enlightened, and then he taught other beings, and also the other beings became enlightened. Those who gain enlightenment following the teachings of the Buddha are called Savakas, or disciples. Now, the enlightenment of the Buddha and enlightenment of the disciples, are they the same or are they different? Now, we may say they are different. Now, enlightenment of the Buddha is accompanied by some types of knowledge that are peculiar to Buddhas only. As soon as Buddha became enlightened, he also gained omniscience. He also gained what is called the great compassion. And there are other kinds of wisdom or knowledge that he gained. And those are not shared by his disciples. So, in that sense, the enlightenment of the Buddhas is different from the enlightenment of disciples. A disciple may become enlightened, but he may not gain, along with enlightenment, the omniscience and so on. And also, with regard to eradicating mental defilements, there is a little difference. Now, Buddhas eradicate mental defilements altogether, and the arahants or disciples eradicate mental defilements altogether. But there is a difference, and I hope you already know that difference. Now, when the Buddhas eradicate mental defilements, their eradication is total, without any we call it vasana. I will explain it. But when disciples or arahants eradicate mental defilements, they are unable to get rid of that vasana, although they have eradicated all mental defilements. So that is the difference between the eradication of mental defilements by the Buddhas and by the disciples. Now, the word vasana is a difficult word to translate. It is often translated as residue or trace. I don't know whether that is correct or not. Now, vasana is described as a certain power dependent on mental defilements. So vasana is not a mental defilement, but some power of these mental defilements. And through that power, a person who has eradicated all mental defilements may still have some behavior which is similar to the behavior of those who have not eradicated mental defilements. So that is what we call vasana. And that vasana, the disciples are unable to get rid of. Now, there may be some behavior of persons who have not yet gained enlightenment. And a person who has gained enlightenment may still have that kind of behavior, which is similar to the behavior of those who have not eradicated mental defilements. So that power of mental defilements is called vasana. And when Buddhas eradicate mental defilements, they eradicate vasana along with mental defilements. But when arahants or disciples get rid of mental defilements, they are unable to get rid of the vasana. So the vasana remains with them, although the mental defilements, all mental defilements, are gone from their mind. I hope you have heard about the Venerable Pilinda Vacha. I've talked about him many times here. So the Venerable Pilindavacha was an arahant during the time of the Buddha. And he came from a very high caste Brahmin family. So naturally he was very proud. And in those days, the people of high caste addressed those of low caste people as wicked men or wretched men or something like that. So when they addressed like that. He must have addressed in this way for many years or many lives. So even after he became an arahant, he still addressed people as a wretched man or something like that. So he was unable to shake off this bad habit of calling people a wretched person or a wicked person. So a story tells us that once a man gathered some up, I don't know how to call them, some roots or something which are used as medicine. So he put them on a cart and he went to the city. And on his way, he met the Venerable Pilindavacha. So the Venerable asked him, "Hey, wretched person, what are you carrying? What are these?" So he was angry with the Venerable Pilindavacha. And so he said, "Oh, they are droppings of rats." So the Venerable Pilindavacha said, "So be it," or something like that. And so he went into the city, and when he was going to sell them, he found to his amazement that all his herbs have turned into the droppings of rats. So when his friends saw this, they knew that he must have met the Venerable Pilindavacha. So they advised him to go fetch the Venerable and ask pardon from him. So he went after him, and when he met the Venerable, then the Venerable asked again, "Hey, wretched person, what are these?" Then this time he told the truth. So they are the herbs. "So be it," Venerable said, and so they turned back into original herbs. So although Pilindavacha was an arahant, although he had eradicated all mental defilements, although he had no ill will in his mind, still he was unable to get rid of this habit of calling people a wretched person or something like that. So the vasana is that much difficult to get rid of. But Buddhas, when they eradicate mental defilements, they eradicate the vasana along with them. So that is the difference between the eradication of mental defilements by the Buddha and by arahants. Can there be enlightened persons outside the Buddha's dispensation? Can there be persons who are enlightened other than the Buddhists? Now, when Buddha was on his deathbed, about to pass away a few hours later, an ascetic came to him and asked a question, whether the teachers of the other sects or other religions are omniscient as they claimed themselves to be. And Buddha put aside that question and then gave another answer. And Buddha's answer was, in whatever Dhamma and discipline, that means in whatever dispensation, the Noble Eightfold Path is found, then the ascetics of the first, the second, the third, and the fourth grade are also not found. But in whatever dhamma and discipline the Noble Eightfold Path is found, then there are also found the ascetics of first, second, third, and fourth grades. So that means in whatever, say, religion, there is the practice of Noble Eightfold Path, or there is the practice of vipassana, then there can be those who gain enlightened in those religions. But if there is no practice of the Noble Eightfold Path, no practice of vipassana, there can be no persons who gain enlightenment. As you know, enlightenment is the outcome of the practice of vipassana meditation, and vipassana meditation and the practice of Eightfold Path are the same. So in this case, we cannot say arbitrarily that there can be no enlightened persons outside the Buddha's dispensation. But actually, the practice of vipassana is found only in Buddhism. Enlightened persons outside the Buddha's dispensation. But actually, the practice of vipassana is found only in Buddhism. And only when people practice vipassana meditation can they become enlightened. So, in practice, we may say there can be no enlightened person outside the Buddha's dispensation. And during the time of the Buddha, I think it was true, because Buddha said the other schools are devoid of true ascetics. That means there are no ascetics or no monks who have eradicated mental defilements in those schools. So if you want to be magnanimous, then we may say that if there is the practice of vipassana or Noble Eightfold Path in a certain religion, then there can be enlightened persons in that religion. As the realization of the Four Noble Truths, enlightenment is just one. But regarding the eradication of mental defilements, there are four kinds of enlightenment, or four stages of enlightenment. Now, the first stage is called a stage of stream entry. Now, stream entry means entering into the stream of the Noble Path. Now, when something gets into a stream, it is sure to reach the river or the ocean. Suppose somebody gets into the stream of a river. So when one gets into the river, then one is sure to reach the ocean. So in the same way, when a person has reached this stream of the Noble Path, one is sure to reach Nibbana. So that stream, the first entering into the stream of Noble Path is called the stage of stream entry, or reaching the stream. In Pali it is called Sotapatti. So this is the first stage of enlightenment. When a person reaches this stage, he is able to eradicate two of the mental defilements. And these two are wrong view and doubt. So a person who has reached this stage and who is called a Sotapanna has no wrong view, has no wrong view regarding the self, regarding the soul, regarding the law of karma and so on. And also he has no doubts, doubt about the Buddha, about the Dhamma, about the Sangha, about the practice, and about the doctrine of dependent origination and so on. So a person who is at this stage is able to eradicate these two mental defilements. Once eradicated, they will never arise again in that person's mind. So they are totally destroyed. And also such a person will be reborn only 7 times in the future. And he will be reborn in human realm or the realms of devas. That means a person who has reached the first stage will not be reborn in the 4 woeful states. After reaching the first stage, a person or an enlightened person will continue his practice of vipassana. And as the result of that vipassana practice, he will reach the second stage. And the second stage of enlightenment is called the stage of one's returning. That means by way of rebirth, he will come back to this human world only once. A comeback means he will be reborn as a human being only once. So that stage is called in Pali, it is called Sagadagami, so once returning. At this stage, a person does not eradicate any more mental defilements, but he makes the remaining mental defilements thinner or weaker. So there still remain mental defilements with him, but these mental defilements are very weak, so that they cannot drag him to the 4 woeful states. And he will have only 2 more rebirths in the world of sensuous sphere or sense sphere. That means in the world of human beings and devas. So a person who has reached the second stage, suppose he reached the second stage as a human being, then after his death here, he will be reborn in the realm of devas. And then from that realm, he will die, and then he will be reborn as a human being again. So that is why he is called once returner. He comes back to this human realm one time. In order to come back here, he has to be reborn in the realm of devas once, and then come back to the human realm and take rebirth. So he has 2 more rebirths in the realm of sense sphere. If he carries on his practice of vipassana, he may reach, as a result of vipassana, the 3rd stage. And the 3rd stage is called the stage of non-returning. That means not coming back to this realm of sense sphere, that means to this to the realm of human beings and to the realm of devas. Now, at this stage, he eradicates two more mental defilements. They are sensual lust and ill will, or dosa, hate or anger. So a person who has reached this stage, the third stage, which is called anagami stage, will have no attachment to the sense objects, and he is incapable of getting angry, since fear is a kind of anger, or regarded as a kind of anger in Abhidhamma. He will not have any fear. So this is the stage of the non-returning. And after death, he will be reborn in the pure abodes of Brahmas. That means he will definitely get jhana before he dies, and then will be reborn in the world of Brahmas that are called the abode of pure beings. So a person who has reached that stage of enlightenment, or who is an anagami, will have no attachment to his life as a human being, to his belongings, or to persons and so on. So in this case, in this respect, he is almost like an arahant. But unlike an arahant, he still has attachment to the realms of Brahmas, and that is why he is reborn in the world of Brahmas. If he practices further, he may reach the fourth stage of enlightenment, and that stage is called the stage of arahantship. And this word is difficult to translate into English. So the stage of a worthy one, or the stage of a person who has eradicated all mental defilements. And so it is better to keep the Pali word. So this fourth stage is the highest stage of enlightenment, and there is no higher stage than this. So when a person reaches this stage, the stage of an arahant, he eradicates all the remaining mental defilements. So there are no mental defilements remaining with him. All mental defilements are gone. But as I said before, something remains with him, and that is the vasana, the power of mental defilement. So a person who becomes an arahant gains the purity of mind. His mind is totally pure from all mental defilements. That means he is incapable of being attached to anything at all, either in the world of senses or in the world of Brahmas. And he is incapable of getting angry, or incapable of fear, incapable of jealousy, and so on. So his mind is in that respect, his mind is totally pure. So when his mind is pure, there are no mental defilements in his mind. And when there are no mental defilements, there is no rebirth for him, because among the mental defilements, the attachment or craving is the one that produces rebirths. Now that Arahant has eradicated all mental defilements, including craving, there is no mental state that could create a new life. So an Arahant is like a fire that has no more fuel. So since there is no more fuel, there is no fire. Since there is no craving, especially craving for existence, there is no existence for him in the future. So an Arahant is described as one who is holding his last body. That means this life in which he becomes an Arahant is the last of his lives, and he has no more lives or no more rebirths in the future. And what when we say that Isodhapanna will be reborn only 7 more times, we mean that that person remains Isodhapanna until his death, and he will not reach the higher stages in the future lives until the 7th life. So in the 7th life he will definitely reach the higher stages until the 4th stage and becomes an Arahant and leave the round of rebirths. So when we say he will be reborn 7 times only, that means he does not reach in the higher stages. If he reaches higher stages, then even in this life he will become a Sakadagami, or he will become an Anagami. So in that case, he will not be reborn 7 times. Now, we have learned what enlightenment is, or what enlightenment is according to Buddhism, and then some things to understand about the enlightenment and the stages of enlightenment. When we practice Vipassana meditation, we aim at reaching these stages. And we will reach these stages only when our practice of Vipassana gets matured, or when we are successful with our Vipassana practice. And according to the advice of the Buddha, even after reaching the first stage, yogis are not to be satisfied with that. They should strive for reaching the second stage, and after the second stage also they are not to be satisfied. They are to try to reach the third stage, and then after the third stage also they must try to reach the fourth stage. So the Buddha's advice is, you are not to be satisfied with just practice of sila, practice of samadhi, and all, even reaching the first, second, and third stages of enlightenment. So you are to strive until you reach the fourth stage. Because Buddha's aim is to get out of suffering. So long as we are in this samsara, even though we may be reborn as a Brahmas who live a very long time, still, according to the definition given by the Buddha, the life of a Brahma is also dukkha or suffering, because the life of a Brahma is also impermanent. It has a beginning and an end. So when we say we want to get out of dukkha or suffering, then we must want to get out of anything that is suffering. So any existence, any life is suffering, and so we try to get out of when we try to get out of suffering, actually we try to get out of this samsara or the round of rebirths. So may our practice of vipassana meditation lead us ultimately to reach the highest stage. Mm-hmm.